good journalism is based on street-level reporting, not suite-level opinionating. The tendency now, opinions get more clicks. And so if someone shouts loudly, then the response of a lot of Christians is to shout louder. Whereas what happened in earlier times is that Christians did a good job of reporting.
Hi, friends. Welcome to Ideas Have Consequences, the podcast of the Disciple Nations Alliance. Here on this show, we examine how our mission as Christians is to not only spread the gospel around the world to all the nations, but our mission also includes to be the hands and feet of God to transform the nations, to increasingly reflect the truth, goodness, and beauty of God's kingdom. Tragically, the church has largely neglected this second part of her mission, and today, most Christians have little influence on their surrounding cultures. Join us on this podcast as we rediscover what it means for each of us to disciple the nations and to create Christ-honoring cultures that reflect the character of the living God. Welcome again, everybody, to another episode of Ideas Have Consequences. This is the podcast of the Disciple Nations Alliance. My name is Scott Allen, and I'm the president of the DNA, and we're really excited to have you joining us again today. I'm here with team members Darrow Miller and Luke Allen, and we are thrilled to have, again, as our special guest, Dr. Marvin Olasky. Marvin, it's great to have you back on the podcast.
Oh, very glad to be with you.
I think if you are a regular listener to our podcast, you know who Dr. Olasky is. And even if you're not, you probably know him because he's so well known and respected within the evangelical Christian community, particularly for his time at World Magazine as the editor-in-chief there. But for those of you who are new to the podcast or don't know anything about Dr. Olasky, he is he's a brilliant guy, and so we're thrilled to know him. He's a graduate of Yale in 1971, and then went on and got his doctorate in American culture from the University of Michigan. That'll become more relevant here in a second as we get into our conversation. Has been a professor, university professor at the University of Texas, Austin, and has done a lot with Christian universities as well, including the King's College, Patrick Henry. But for most of his career, Marvin has been working as a writer and a journalist. He really left his mark at World Magazine, working from 1992 to 2001. Of late, Marvin has been a busy beaver on books, and that's what we're here to talk about today, because Marvin, you've got two books coming out within a month, which I am just—I don't know—I'm floored by that. That you know, in 2 months, two new books, two different publishers. So we want to talk to you about that. But congratulations, that's fantastic, and I just want to congratulate you on that. Let me just go ahead and give the titles of the books as we get started here. The first one is called "Moral Vision." And the subtitle is Leadership from George Washington to Joe Biden. And you're looking at moral leadership in the United States in particular. And that book is releasing tomorrow. Is that right? Yeah.
Right.
That's awesome.
That's correct.
Congratulations on that. And then the next book is called Pivot Points. I love the subtitle of this book, Adventures on the Road to Christian Contentment. And this is really, as I understand it, Marvin, this is kind of a memoir, a bit of your own personal story.
Well, that's right. And there should be one correction that I'll offer, probably because whatever I sent you in biographical information, I probably had a typo in it. I was actually editing World from 1992, not just to 2001, but to 2021.
Yes.
And that's probably my typo, but... anyway,
yeah,
Thanks for correcting the record there. I stopped editing in 2021. I stopped editing in 2021, and that's why I'm able to come out with these two books. I don't think I'd be able to do it if I were still editing.
And, you know, too, I'll just mention to our listeners, you know, because you guys are fans of the ministry of the DNA, you know, Marvin has been hugely helpful, you know, in terms of getting our messages out on biblical worldview, and the power of truth to transform, especially very broken, impoverished cultures around the world. He's been an endorser and a promoter of our books. And Marvin, I'm deeply grateful for that. I just continue to be grateful for your friendship and your belief in our ministry. It just means the world to us.
Well, I'm grateful for DNA. Yeah, I'm grateful for DNA, and I've actually seen DNA in action in places mm-hmm. like Ghana. So far flung spots around the world, I'm seeing the difference that a DNA understanding makes.
Well, it's not DNA. It's the power of God's word when it's applied, you know, broadly and holistically in all areas, and people begin to live that out. It does bring change. It just brings a transformation, and so that's what we're called to do. And we just thank you for your friendship and partnership, and just using your quite large platform and megaphone to help us get our message out. We're so grateful. Marvin, let's transition to the books. I'm going to open it up here to Darrow and Luke too, but I'd like you to just tell us about both of the books a little bit. Just give us an overview, whichever one you want to start with, and just tell us a little bit about what the books are about and what kind of prompted you to write them at this time.
Well, I'll start with Moral Vision, which comes out first. I've always been interested, at least since college, in presidents of the United States and why they do what they do and what effect their beliefs have on their actions. And back in 1998, I was writing a book about presidents, and this was right in the middle of the Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky scandal. And I was very agitated about that. In World, actually, we had a cover saying that Bill Clinton was unfit to be president. I was writing about presidents at that time, so I included some stuff about Bill Clinton. I think it was probably an overheated book in some ways, because I was angry about Bill Clinton's actions. And so looking back at that 25 years later and seeing that some of my rhetoric was overheated, and then also seeing that I had left some things out. I don't think I paid enough attention to race relations and the effect the presidents had. And then I wanted to write about some people I had skipped before, like Harry Truman. And then, of course, updating it to Donald Trump and our current president. So that's why I started writing this again. And as we at World had thought that Bill Clinton was unfit for office in 2016, we had a very controversial cover and a story I wrote saying that that Donald Trump, we thought, was unfit to be president. And that created a lot of consternation in various places. But with all that agitation about it, I wanted to get back to this question of how much do beliefs of presidents affect their actions? What makes a president fit or unfit to be president? So it deals with those questions, and those questions really are moral vision, which then get expressed in action. So that's that book. And then the other one is really a memoir, and just dealing with the various pivots in my life over the years and the way that it seems to me that we shouldn't be afraid of the changes. All of this is under God's authority and God's sovereignty, and we should in each situation be trying to discern what God is teaching us and not running from it, but actually understanding and trying to be faithful to God.
Well, and just on the latter book, Marvin, for our listeners who aren't aware, your life has been just so fascinating, you know, and I think, you mentioned this in the promotional piece for the book, how you began as, you know, kind of coming out of a Jewish family, a Jewish background, moving into communism, atheism, traveling to the Soviet Union, and then becoming a Christian. And I mean, so those pivot points have been really significant for you. And your life is a fascinating life and journey. And so both books, I'm looking forward to reading that one in particular, just because I'm just fascinated by your life story. I was curious, you called it a Adventures on the Road to Christian Contentment. Tell me a little bit about that subtitle, and especially the word contentment. What are you trying to say there?
Well, The biggest pivot in my life was from 1973 to 1976, when I moved from atheism to a belief in Christ. So that's the most significant. But that it's a testimony. But sometimes people in writing memoirs, their story culminates in a particular testimony. That's the kind of genre it tends to be. And actually, that was the beginning of a whole series of adventures. And I've had big aspirations, trying to, in a way, reform Christian journalism, trying, in a way, to change our way of poverty fighting in the country so that we actually act biblically with Christian compassion. So I've had a lot of these big goals, and none has been entirely fulfilled, big professional goals. But big goals, small disappointments, sometimes bigger disappointments, but always through God's kindness and mercy, being able to move on to something else that I hope has glorified him. Now, the one thing that hasn't been a disappointment, I've been married now for 47 and a half years, and that's just been glorious and getting better and better. So in that most important aspect, it's been wonderful. And some of the professional things, again, big, huge aspirations, sometimes disappointments, but learning and being content with what God gives rather than wishing for more.
That's fantastic. What a great lesson for all of us. And I also want to applaud you, Marvin, for taking on, for dreaming big dreams, you know, and you know, how do we reform journalism is a big dream, and not being afraid or shying away from those things as God has opened the doors. I think that's a lesson to us all. So,
I know, Marvin, for previous conversations, you know that how impactful your book, The Tragedy of American Compassion, has been on our thinking and the formation of the ideas in the DNA and the importance of a biblical worldview for addressing issues of poverty. That book was seminal in Scott's and my own thinking and shaping what we've been involved in for all these years. And I think the way I would summarize it, you looked at issues of poverty and compassion from a biblical worldview and contrasted that with a modern atheistic worldview. And what I'd like to do is ask you to do a similar thing in terms of journalism. You made a comment a few minutes ago about your life as a journalist. How did you have that calling into journalism? And how does the biblical worldview shape your desire to reform journalism? And I would imagine it's not just within an evangelical Christian context, but what is the framework for being a good journalist?
Yeah, very good questions. The framework, I think, is understanding at least what we at World would call biblical objectivity. In other words, people sometimes talk about objectivity, but the interpreting facts depends very much on the worldview that you have. In a sense, when cameras came in, photography came in the late 19th century, the original understanding of journalists was that, well, what the camera shows is what is objectively real. But then increasingly people figured out that, in fact, you have to decide where to set up the camera, and that's going to make a big difference. And then as there were different types of film and different types of this and different types of different lenses, all that is going to vary. And so there are decisions that have to be made. There isn't a universal objectivity that anywhere you set the camera, it's going to tell what's going on, because you may position the camera so it's just shooting a bare wall. That's not going to help you a whole lot. On the other hand, a lot of, in recent years, or the past 50 years or so, journalists have moved away from an idea of objectivity to an idea of utter subjectivity. namely, it's all a matter of opinion, and we're just going to tell our opinions. We're not actually going to do good reporting and getting out on at street level. We're just going to sit in our offices at street level and suck our thumbs and give our opinions, and that's all you can do because everything is complete subjectivity. Well, neither of those positions is really accurate and biblical. Subjectivity, of course, that's like saying you make up your own existence, you make up your own facts, you make up your own view of everything. Well, no. There is right and wrong. There is good and evil. We learn from the Bible what these are. We always see through a glass darkly. We are not capable of understanding God's thoughts. He is obviously much wiser than ourselves, but we can try as best we can in our limited and fallen way to apply what the Bible teaches to the events that go on around us. And we can try to do it in a way that takes account of the facts, that's based on good reporting, and not just slinging our opinions. So that's what biblical objectivity is. You go out and do a good job, you build from the facts, you build in a sense from the bottom up inductively, and then you have some understanding. When you apply the Bible to the facts you see around, you have some understanding of the reality that actually exists. And that's what we tried to do at World, biblical objectivity. And it's different from journalistic subjectivity, which is the ruling doctrine now, or this attempt at objectivity that just is fallacious because objectivity differs according to the worldview. And you have to take into account how you're looking at things, with what view you're looking at things, with what understanding you're looking at things. So that's the basic challenge we have in journalism.
We live in a world of poverty, corruption, and injustice. We all know this isn't the way it should be, and help needs to come from somewhere. But who is responsible to fight poverty and bring healing to our broken communities? The government or the church? The answer is the church, but unfortunately, we have largely neglected this responsibility. Here at the Disciple Nations Alliance, for the last 25 years, we have worked around the world helping Christians understand that our mission is more than saving souls for heaven. As you heard me say during the introduction to this episode, our mission also includes being the hands and feet of God to transform the nations and bring healing and transformation to our broken world. If this subject interests you and you'd like to learn more, we would highly recommend that you check out our most popular free video worldview training course, which is called the Kingdomizer Training Program and is available at corumdeo.com. Join over a million others who have learned how to bring biblical transformation into every corner of society by signing up today at corumdeo.com. Again, that is corumdeo.com. Or you can find the link in this episode's landing page.
Very briefly here, American journalism up until the 1840s was Christian journalism. There was a sense that there is God, that the Bible is true, that you can apply the Bible in interpreting what goes on around you. And then starting in the 1840s, in a sense, Christian journalism collapsed. It tended to become more sermonic, not really based on looking at the world around us, but just almost always dealing within what's within the four walls of the church. Christian journalists stopped doing a good job of reporting, and secular journalists took over, and it's been that way pretty much for 150 years up until 1980s, 1990s. At World, we tried to reassert this understanding of biblical objectivity and try in a way to bring back journalism to the earlier understanding, but also to just do a better job of reporting and going out and viewing the world, not just sitting in our studios, not just in our offices, but actually, if we're reporting border controversies, go to the border. If we're reporting poverty, go and actually learn about it. If I'm working a lot now on homelessness and going and living in various homeless shelters and actually seeing what it's like. So anyway, that's what we tried to do with World, and it was a very exciting proposition. And I think there are journalists now who are still trying to do it, and we just want to be able to honor them and help them. I mean, very briefly, I'll just mention, we have a little foundation called Zenger House after an early Christian journalist named John Peter Zenger. And we give out awards every year. We've done this. This will be our third year doing it. We give out awards to journalists, both at Christian publications and secular publications, who are trying to be biblically objective as best they can. And that's an exciting proposition, too. Mm.
Yeah, Marvin, I'm really excited to look into both these books once they come out, especially Pivot Points. Also caught my attention. I've noticed as a young guy, I'm right on the edge of a millennial slash Gen Z. I'm right in that gap. And I'm, you know, a young guy starting a young family. And I've found it recently, I really like reading memoirs and biographies, especially as someone who's in the Gen Z generation. The last couple years have been a little tumultuous, kind of my entire adult life, starting out with 2016 until now. I've just been a little crazy. And when I look at the world, I'm like, is it always this bad? Or am I just paying attention at the wrong time? And when you look back at biographies and memoirs, you see that there's a constant theme of the world's coming to an end, but then, you know, God's faithful, and then crazy things happen, but God's still faithful. And it's cool to see that through the lives of Christians, especially. And I looked into your into Pivot Points already, and it looks really interesting. But yeah, what you were just talking about with journalism caught my attention, especially today. There's just this a real seemingly lack in good journalism. I have a really hard time figuring out what's actually going on out there in the world. You know, journalism's supposed to be all about objective truth, like you were saying, facts, you know, informing the people, helping them make decisions, helping them walk through the decisions, making process accurately, fairly, non-biased opinions, all of that. But I just have such a hard time finding that out there today, especially in the world of digital media and where it's all about clicks. So you can just anything that'll essentially make it as far as possible, people will put out there, even if it's completely unmoored from the truth. And now we're getting to the age of AI and deep fakes and, you know, faking people's voices and, you know, putting up fake speeches and whatever. It's just getting crazy. And finding mm-hmm. journalists you can trust is getting harder. So I'm excited to learn more about your thought process throughout that book. And when it comes to that biblical objective journalism, is that what you called it? Yeah, biblical objectivity. That'll be fascinating. Back to Darrow's question. For journalists who aren't believers and don't have a biblical worldview, what should I be looking in? What characteristics should I look for in a journalist like that who still cares about the truth enough to report on it and maybe doesn't have the biblical objectivity but is sticking to the facts as they are? What do you look for when you're looking for a journalist like that?
Yeah, there's a lot of hysteria out there now, and a lot of people saying the sky is falling, things are worse now than they've ever been before, and so forth. Luke, I would not trade trying to approach this with biblical objectivity. I would not trade our current situation, difficult as it is, for let's say the situation in 1861 as the United States is actually embarking on a disunited state of civil war. And, you know, 4 years of just 700,000 deaths, which if you translated that into our current population would be 7 million plus deaths.
Wow.
I would not trade our situation for that. I wouldn't trade our situation for where you have Nazi Germany triumphant, you have the United States enters the war in December with the disaster at Pearl Harbor. I wouldn't trade our situation for that either, objectively. What's different is that you have a lot of journalists and politicians and others just saying the sky is falling, things are terrible, there's nothing you can do, there's disaster coming and so forth. So objectively, our situation is better than it was, let's say, during those previous times of crisis. Subjectively, in terms of what we're reading and what we're hearing, in terms of a breakdown of communication, in terms of people unable often to tell what's true from what's made up, now especially with AI coming in, it's a mess. But it's a mess if we think the sky is falling, God has deserted us, there's nothing we can do, we're hopeless. It becomes a bigger mess if we think it is. Because objectively, things are not as bad as they have been at other times, and we survived those times. And if God is kind to us, we can survive these times too.
Hmm. Yeah, I agree that objectively, there has been darker moments in our past. But one thing I see as a similarity between your two books, Moral Vision and Pivot Points, is that things are changing. And one, the biggest thing that's changed is this: we're drifting from truth, from morality, mm-hmm. from virtue, as a whole, as a society in the United States and as the West more broadly. And with this comes the breakdown of journalism. And with this becomes a breakdown in leadership at a political level that we can trust and we can look to and really wholeheartedly endorse. And I think that's true for a lot of other countries. But this shift of straying from truth, I see as kind of a similarity between your two books. Marvin, we have a global audience here on the podcast. So more than 25% of our audience is in all over the world, essentially. So I would love to hear more about Moral Vision, but the main thing I would like to get at today is that question of what makes a president or a leader of any type in other countries fit or unfit to be a president. So what should we be looking for as Christians in our elected leaders? We all want to be active citizens, but how do we do that in a world where sometimes the options seem very limited?
Yeah. Yeah. What are we really for, I think, is a question to ask. In other words, let's talk about three different types of things that can be what's preeminent in our thinking about how to act in particular ways. I mean, number one, you could say is, well, what's in it for me? So there are some individuals who just seem very selfish, egotistical, and that's not a good situation for a president. One of the things we can learn from the Bible is that the best leaders are servants and people who think of themselves as servants and serving others rather than just egotistically thinking about themselves. So that's one type of leader who's just in it for himself. Another type of leader is in it, in a sense, for his organization. And in some ways, that's certainly better than just being in it for yourself because you're thinking about other people as well as yourself. That's a second thing. And there are a lot of presidents who are like that. They're not so much just focused on themselves, but they're focused on, in a sense, their tribe, their administration, their party. And then a third way is to think of, well, what should we do that thinking beyond ourselves and beyond our tribe, what can we do? What's our vision of what's right and truthful? And as Christians, what should we be doing to glorify God and enjoy Him forever, beginning right now? So you have some presidents who are animated by number one, that is, I am number one, what's in it for me? You have some who are animated by what's in it for their tribe or administration or party, and you have some with actually a moral vision of something more important. And so they're willing sometimes to sacrifice some of their own power and popularity, not just for themselves, not even for their parties or tribes, but because there's some sense, we hope, informed by the Bible about what's true and what's right. And I think we should try to find leaders who have that type of sensibility, not just in it for themselves, not just in it for their administration, but in it because they think the country and the world and God's glory will be better off.
How would you say, Marvin, how does the church cultivate that kind of leadership in a culture?
Yeah, good question. I'd say, first of all, by taking the Bible seriously and not just reading into the Bible what we would like to be there, but reading out of the Bible what God has put there. For example, and the way I got involved in writing this this book that you referred to, The Tragedy of American Compassion, was really for a dozen years after I became a Christian, trying to read the Bible faithfully and just seeing how much the Bible says about poverty and helping the poor, mm-hmm. the poor in spirit, the poor materially, helping widows, orphans, the strangers within our gates, prisoners. How can we help those people? There's so much about that. And if you approach public policy issues with that in mind, what can we do on a certain question, not just to help ourselves and benefit our particular party or class, but what can we do to help the least and the lost? then that changes the way you think about policy. So I'd say it starts with, we hope, reading the Bible. Now, there can be good leaders who aren't Christians. What can they do? Well, they can still, at least in a country that has some biblical residue, they can think about loving our neighbor as ourselves. They're not going to be impelled to it by the reading of the Bible, but if they're in a culture that's been influenced by the Bible, they're going to be thinking more in these terms than if they're in a culture that just says, as, for example, ancient Greece and Rome, the strong should do whatever they want to do, and women should be exploited. Children, if you don't want them, should be exposed, left out to die. I should enslave people. If I can get away with it, that's what I should do. If you're in a culture like that that emphasizes power rather than compassion, you're going to act in a very different way than if you're in a culture, either because people are still reading the Bible or nevertheless, they've been formed in some ways by the Bible. It makes a huge difference.
So you're saying churches need to be taking the scriptures more seriously and more seriously in all areas of life, like in the area of poverty, the issue of the dignity of women, telling the truth if you're a journalist.
Yes. The Bible teaches very clearly that you don't do what they did in ancient Rome. That is, if you want to dump a wife, just dump her. If you want to have sexual activities with any people outside of marriage, that's wrong. In Hindu cultures traditionally, there was the idea that when the man died, you burn the widow. A lot of cultures had that, where men are more physically powerful and they just dominate women. And children are the property. Women are the property of men. Children are the property of men. Do with it what you want. You put people in slavery. If you can do it, do it. That's what most cultures from much of the world have done. A Bible-oriented culture is very, very different.
Marvin, I'd like to pick up on Darrow's question and maybe ask it a little bit of a different way, because it seems like there is a thread between the tragedy of American compassion, what we've been talking about with journalism, and also leadership in terms of virtue. And that is, this is just my observation that all of those things, journalism in terms of objective truth, seeking and conveying objective truth, poverty in terms of doing what actually, leads to help for the poor, and then, virtuous leadership. There was a time in our country when all of those areas were shaped heavily by Christianity, and it seems to me like what you've noticed is that there was a time when Christians kind of backed out, like you were mentioning in journalism back in the 1800s. There was this kind of reversal, and then there was, Christians stopped, either changed the way they were doing journalism or stopped doing kind of objective journalism. You mentioned the same thing in Tragedy of American Compassion, where there was a lot of Christian involvement in helping the poor, the addicted and whatnot to rise out of poverty. And then it shifted, again, late 1800s, early 1900s, and a lot of the work became quite secularized, and it was just kind of dominated by secular thinking. Just give the poor enough to eat, and they'll be, they won't be poor anymore. Christians kind of got out of the work, and you could say the same thing with leadership, right? There was a time when kind of Christian virtues shaped people, and now we're in a situation where it's hard to find a leader in the United States that really exhibits, those kind of Christian virtues. So I guess my question is, Marvin, what happened, with the church in terms of shaping the culture where we got out of it in many ways, in many different areas, and other people kind of picked it up and ran with it? Because it seems like where we're at today is we're in a situation where, 80, 100 years beyond that, we haven't been having a lot of influence in these areas, and so they've been shaped by these other non-Christian worldviews, and you have all sorts of negative consequences as a result. We have leaders that don't, you know, reflect virtue. We have journalists that are just, you know, their philosophy of journalism is propaganda, because that's what subjective journalism is, essentially. So I guess, what happened then? How do we turn it around now, I guess, is maybe a way of asking that question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What happened is that other understandings came in, and cultural leaders, academic leaders, absorbed those understandings and then translated them into terms that people who were not academically or culturally trained could understand. So you had the development of, coming from the top, people who would teach and communicate values that were very much opposed to biblical values, and others would then pick up on that. And you can look at particular influences. You can look at the influence of Karl Marx, certainly, in which, instead of thinking that people whom have providentially gained some means should use those means to help the poor, instead there was the assumption that they were just going to exploit the poor. And the more, in fact, there was that assumption, the more, in a sense, there was permission for people who were wealthy sometimes to exploit the poor. Because there was an understanding, yes, everything proceeds on a class background. Certainly Charles Darwin and his theories from Origin of Species in 1859 up to the present, if you basically think that people are just mammals, just animals, and there's a struggle for survival, and you're basically going to have the survival of the fittest, then you try to gain power and use that power not to help others but to exploit others. Lions and tigers and bears don't really think through how they're going to help sheep and lambs and others. They're just out there to eat them. And basically, if we start thinking of ourselves in those terms, then we're back to the period of ancient Rome and ancient India and other places where the powerful were just going to use their power to get more power. So whether you do that, whether you look at the way Sigmund Freud influenced psychology, you can go field by field.
Yes.
And you see that instead of seeing that we are created in God's image and we are called to be gardeners of God's world and called to help people who, for whatever reason, haven't been providentially graced as we have, if instead of thinking in those terms, you just think in terms of power, then you're going to get a very bad situation, which is where we are right now. So in a way, it's not surprising. Once you no longer take the Bible as your compass, it's not surprising that you're not going to know what's north, what's south, what's east, what's west. It's just going to be make it up as you go along in whatever way advantages you.
And so, Marvin, back, you know, the folks that you mentioned, Freud and Marx and Darwin, you know, these guys were active, you know, very powerful, very influential sets of ideas in the late 1800s, you know, kind of quickly, you know, became mainstream through academia and whatnot. Why didn't the church, you know, it seemed to me, and this is just, I'm looking back at that, it didn't have a very good response to that. It kind of almost said, hey, we're just going to give the culture over to these new powerful ideas that are taking over academia and that are going to filter down into poverty and journalism and every other area, these atheistic ideas. And we're just going to focus on kind of what we do in the church, you know, and prayer and evangelism, and we're just mm-hmm. going to let all those other areas, you know, just be taken over, essentially. And now when you have Christians, right, saying, hey, we need to kind of, you know, make some inroads back into those areas that we used to have a lot of influence in 100 years ago, but we don't anymore, you know, then we're dangerous Christian nationalists trying to take over the country. But anyways, comments on that, because it seems to me like their response when those powerful ideas came in, and I think that's what we're struggling with now, is that they've now kind of embedded themselves in journalism and in every other area. In leadership, you know, just, you know, civic leadership. We're trying to kind of dig ourselves out of a ditch that we ourselves, the church, the Christians, were kind of partly responsible for.
Yeah. I mean, I could give a general answer to that, but let me talk for a minute about what I know and have actually researched myself, namely journalism history.
Yeah.
Good journalism is based on street-level reporting, not suite-level opinionating.
Yes.
The tendency now, opinions get more clicks. And so if someone shouts loudly, then the response of a lot of Christians is to shout louder. We're gonna outshout them.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas what happened in earlier times is that Christians did a good job of reporting.
Yes.
With human interest, specific detail, colorful stories, you start to see a difference. News in itself is interesting and exciting, and you want to find out what's going on if the story is well told. And I've gone back and actually read publications from the 1700s, the early 1800s in America, and there was a certain sense of excitement. You start to see a turn around the middle of the 19th century where people, instead of saying, oh, I am reading this newspaper, I'm opening it up, I want to read an interesting story, I want to enjoy this, there's going to be drama and human interest and action. Instead, you see people saying, oh, here's a copy of the Sabbath Observer that's just shown up. Oh, I guess I have to read it now. It's my duty to read it because the church is presenting it, and I must grit my teeth and read it.
Mm.
Once you stopped emphasizing, or editors stopped emphasizing, good writing, lively writing, specific detail, human interest, humor, all those good things, bad writing drove out good writing in a lot of Christian publications.
And were they writing specifically? Yeah. Were they writing specifically for themselves too? Kind of like you say, you know, where I'm a Baptist writing for other Baptists at that point instead of for a broader audience.
I'm a Baptist writing for the Baptist, and I am a very serious person, and I'm going to write about very serious things. I am going to give you a sermon, and you are going to sit and listen to it whether you like it or not.
Mm, okay.
There started to be, and then more recently there started to be a sense of, well, a person I don't like is shouting, I'm going to shout louder.
Mm.
And that's not the way really to make reading and listening enjoyable rather than an errand that you have to do, you're forced to do it.
I'd like to continue to pick. Yeah, go ahead, Marvin. Yeah.
No, go ahead. No, I was just going to make a bad joke, so you please go ahead and save me from that.
Well, yeah, I think I'd like to just pick up on this, continue on the thread of journalism, Marvin, because that's your area. And it's
sure.
Just to me, it's we are in such crisis right now in journalism because so you have this split that you're talking about that happened in the late 1800s, early 1900s, where journalism began to be taken over by non-Christians operating from maybe atheistic worldviews. And now, if you fast forward to the present, we're in a fully post-truth, right? You know, post-truth, post-modern moment. And it seems to me that, you know, 10 years ago, there used to be a discussion about bias in journalism. You know, it's biased to the left. It seems like we've left that behind. And now you've got probably the most influential journalistic outfits are just openly exposing, you know, that, you know, what we are all about is promoting a particular point of view or a narrative. You know, and they've just completely given up on objective truth, it seems to me. And I find that just kind of still jaw-dropping. And that's a crisis. I mean, we need journalism, right? We need to know what actually is happening and not just whatever the narrative is that the powerful want me to know what's happening, right? And as Luke said, it seems to me that, you know, it's just so hard now to even know what's happening and add layer on top of that AI or censorship. You know, we're in a real crisis of just trying to even know what the heck's going on because journalists have shifted into, they've abandoned truth and just what are the facts? Let's get the facts out to the American people so they can make their best judgment and things like that. So, given that crisis, and you know, you're right. I mean, we've faced crises in the past, and I don't mean to overblow the current crisis in any way, but it seems to me that this is quite a serious crisis. how do we as Christians recover, you know, and go back and, and where do you see some hope and see that beginning to happen? Do you see a movement, a shift back on the part of Christians, on the church, to say, oh, let's just not yell at these people that are promoting post-truth narratives, but how do we kind of redo really good Christian journalism again? And I know that's something you've given a lot of your life to.
Yeah, there are two problems, really. There's a problem in local journalism and there's a problem in national journalism. Mm. And they're different problems. The problem in local journalism is that increasingly in city after city, town after town, because of the economics of journalism, which get a little bit complicated, but basically lots of newspapers are just getting going out of business.
Yes.
Lots of local newspapers, they've laid off just about all of their staff. They are just, when they still exist, they're basically just relaying national news. Mm. And so people don't know what's going on in their own city councils and their own towns and so forth. That's a huge problem. We're trying to do a little bit about that with our Zenger House Foundation. Mm. For example, in the Sharpstown area, southwest Houston, we're backing a local newspaper. It's not a small area. There are about 100,000 people in that area, and there hasn't been information for them available what's really going on in their own area. There are the couple of large Houston newspapers, but they just cover the big metropolis. Mm-hmm. But in Sharpstown itself, people don't know what's going on. So we have a publication called the Sharpstown Sharpener. Mm. We train the editor, and we're backing that editor. And that's just one thing, but I'd like to see things like that going on all in lots of places around the country.
Yeah, I love that vision. It's very grassroots
town,
and very
city,
practical.
Journalism.
Yeah, right. Just what's
happening. Yeah, so that's what's happening on the local level, the sounds of silence very often. Mm. On the national level, the big problem is that people are not doing detailed, hard, investigative reporting. They're just shouting. And I used to think, and again, a long time ago, before Christ saved me, I was on the left. And starting from the 1970s up until recent years, I was thinking the big problem is on the left. And conservatives and people on the right can fight against that. Well, I am now seeing the big problem on the left is still there, but there's also a big problem on the right, where people on the right are not doing reporting, are not actually looking hard at things, but are just shouting and shouting louder and propagandizing. So this tribalism is very difficult, and Christians are not supposed to be tribal. Jesus taught about how there's neither Jew nor Greek, how we're supposed to love our neighbor as ourselves, and he gave as an example the Good Samaritan, helping a person from a different ethnic group, and actually the Samaritan's despised by the Jews. The Samaritan's the real hero there. So the New Testament is not tribalistic at all. It's very much thinking of seeing our neighbors as people of, you know, every tribe, every class, every group, we're supposed to be thinking about not just our own faction. And nationally, the problem is we're very factionalized, we're very tribalized. And we have publications on the right that are becoming just as bad as publications on the left, just issuing propaganda rather than actually doing reporting. So you just hear this beat all over the place. The sky is falling. And people keep saying that. And rather than just understanding that we pray to God and God in his mercy can and we pray will hold up the sky, you just have this feeling of despair. And the people on the left are saying propagandistic things, so we have to respond with our own propaganda rather than actually going and doing a good job of street-level reporting. That's the problem nationally, opinionating louder and louder and louder and screaming at each other.
I feel like in the wake of the lack of good journalism, we've seen the new phase of all the social media quote unquote journalists, you know, the people picking up their iPhone, shooting a video, adding some commentary and posting it and getting, you know, more views on their little video than the New York Times does. Social media is definitely putting a lot of newspapers out of business, for good or bad. What are your thoughts about this new phenomenon? I know for my generation, I saw recently more people get the news from TikTok and YouTube. Yeah. Than any other news source. Is this good? Is this bad? Is this something I should stay away from? It's definitely popular.
Well, yeah, I mean, TikTok is a special problem insofar as it's under the thumb of the dictators in China. And hey, if you were President Xi in China and you wanted to do something that was utterly brilliant, you would have TikTok, and you'd have American teenagers and folks your age, Luke, just living off TikTok. And I think that's a huge disaster. But then you go to other social media, and the problem is there's a tendency, you know, they have algorithms that you get more of what you like. And people tend to like what already agrees with, I mean, and I say people, I'm not just saying others. I mean, I am a sinner also. We tend to like what we already agree with, and unless we make a real effort to read things that we don't agree with, we're just going to get more and more and more of what we already agree with, and we're going to think more and more and more that our tribe is the righteous tribe and all the others are terrible. So that's a big problem. I would hope that listeners would deliberately go out and try to listen to and read things with which they don't agree and educate. We need to educate ourselves in that way. For everything we read that we agree with, we should try to read something we disagree with. And then I'm speaking here particularly politically and socially, that would be very helpful. There's, by the way, I'll just stop there.
Marvin, what are your thoughts on, we need to be wrapping up here, and Dara, I want to make sure you get, you know, any final questions in as well, but what are your thoughts on groups like the Free Press, Barry Weiss? It seems like there's a group that's really trying hard to kind of recover some objectivity at the national level. Not necessarily Christians. These are often people that, like in her case, worked in the New York Times, but it became so propagandistic that she eventually got pushed out. Any thoughts on some of these new outlets that are coming up and other ways that you get the news or you find it very helpful? You mentioned trying to read broadly, but...
Right. No, I taught for 25 years. I was a professor at the University of Texas at Austin, and certainly the education, at least as long as I was there and intimately knew what was going on, the education kids were getting was often a propagandistic education. And insofar as the Free Press, Barry Weiss, and others are trying to be really for freedom of speech and emphasize that it's good to hear from different viewpoints politically, that I think is very useful, and I'm glad they are there.
Well, the books, and I'm just going to mention it again, that are coming out are Moral Vision and Pivot Points. Moral Vision is being released tomorrow, and the subtitle is Leadership from George Washington to Joe Biden. And I just want to encourage all of our listeners to go and check those out on Amazon. If you can, you know, purchase books when they're first released, it's a huge help. Darrow, I'd like to just, any final questions for Marvin as we wrap up, or thoughts on your side in terms of this discussion that we've been having?
No, I'm fine. I think this is the place to wrap it up, is to just go back to Marvin's two new books. You will be encouraged and blessed by things that Marvin writes. And I can testify, I think Scott can as well, that Marvin, things you have written have been life-changing for each of us and for the work that God has called us into. So let me just encourage those who are listening to the podcast, be sure to pick up one of these two new books by Marvin.
Well, thank you, Dara.
Yeah, and Marvin, thanks for your work. Thanks for your scholarship, just for, you know, the incredible perspective, especially historical perspective, that you bring on so many of these issues. And we look forward to reviewing and reading these books, and also the one that's upcoming on homelessness, which is such a crisis here in our cities, especially on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to seeing that as well. Thanks for your work, and thanks for being with us today, Marvin. And for our listeners, thank you again for tuning in to another episode of Ideas Have Consequences. This is the podcast of the Disciple Nations Alliance.
Thank you for listening to this episode with Dr. Marvin Alasky. If you'd like to learn more about Alasky and any of the resources that we mentioned today, just head to this episode's page on our website or tap the link in the show notes. And by the way, on that page, you can also learn more about the Kingdomizer training program, which I mentioned in today's commercial. Ideas Have Consequences is brought to you by the Disciple Nations Alliance. To learn more about our ministry, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, or on our website, which is disciplenations.org. Thanks again for joining us. Please share the show with a friend, and we hope you're able to join us here next week on Ideas Have Consequences for a discussion on how to combat abortion and create a culture of life with pro-life advocate Sammy Parker.